Welcome to 216 and a Link to the Past Randomizer podcast. I am your host, Fear Agent. Today on the show, we've got Chex Human. Chex and I have both been a part of the community for quite some time, and yet we've had very limited interaction. We've done a couple races here or there. You know, he was racing a lot of modes that I was afraid and still am afraid to race a bit. And our circle of friends was maybe a little bit different, so we just never had a lot of interaction. But I asked him to come on the show, and he agreed, and I'm so glad that he did, because we had such a fun, interesting conversation. Like, I had a really good time talking with Chex, and I think that will come through in the interview, so excited for you to hear that. Lots of different stuff going on in the community. Tournaments are happening, league is coming up, people are playing rando. There's no council, and yet things continue. Speaking of no council, Tark is in the middle of finding its admins. It put out applications for people that wanted to apply for admin. We got the list. I think it's close to 40 people. And coming up later this week, I think there's going to be a vote. And the community gets to choose who the five people are that are going to shape what Tark becomes. That's the thing. We don't know what Tark is. Is it Council 2.0? Is it something different? The one thing that I'm seeing is that everyone has a different opinion on what they think Tark should be. It's going to be really interesting to see who the community votes in and shapes what Tark looks like. A lot of really solid options for admin. I did apply. I feel like I could use this platform to like state my case as to why you should vote for me. Not going to do that. Instead, what I've done is I've opened up the opportunity for all admin applicants to come on to 216. I've asked them all the same three questions, giving them a chance to voice why they think you should vote for them, what their vision for Tark is, and how they can make it practical. So I have a bonus episode coming out Tuesday. If you're listening to this as the show drops on Monday, come back again tomorrow for the bonus episode. And I put out the call to the admin applicants. I got about half to come on the show. I think it's really good. I really just wanted to give a voice to the people that are less well known in the community, maybe have been racing for a while or are in a different language community. People that haven't necessarily had a chance to make a name in the rando community yet, or have kind of remained on the sidelines for whatever reason, and they decided to apply. I feel like they needed a shot. And you could go through the forums over on Tark and read through all of the dissertations, many, many pages of text answering some of the community's questions. And if you do that and it's able to help you make a more informed decision on who you think should be running this thing, more power to you. I'm glad that would work, but I wanted to use the podcast as a way to get some of those voices out. So look for that tomorrow. I'll quickly say what I think my role as an admin would be, is I think everything could be a little bit more simplified. We don't need bylaws. We don't need any of that stuff. We need Tark to be a place where a new runner can come, maybe have a couple channels where it says like new to racing, start here, has a link to the rules, has a link to the glitches, you know, just like a place for someone to start. It should be a place where we have a competitive rule set, and it should be a place where we have a team of people set to investigate cheating. Those three things are really what, in my opinion, Tark should be. I think the racing rule set as it is right now, save for Specky Clip, should remain the same. I think the community as a whole should vote on Specky Clip and do that going forward. Keep the rules as they are, and then as new glitches come, have a community vote. That's what I would do. Of course, I'd be a part of a group, so it's not just what I want, it's what the group wants, and how do we let the community be a part of it. The community's great as it is. Like, there's so many different sub-communities. You could go hang out with Brave and Zen. You could go hang out in 40 Bonks. You can hang out with the people on the ladder. I know AFG's got a group of people. There's lots of like mini groups. And it's honestly pretty easy to find really friendly people to introduce new runners to the community. I don't think Tark needs to be that. I think Tark should be focused on racing competitively. I hear the word casual a lot. And in my mind, when I think of casual, you could do whatever you want. Let me compare it to Magic the Gathering. Like, I haven't played Magic the Gathering in a while, but Magic the Gathering has a rule set and a bunch of cards that are banned for each of their sets. If you want to play Standard, there's probably some cards that are banned. If you want to play Modern, there's probably a couple of cards that are banned. And that's just for the health of the game. Now, I need to know what the rules are and which cards are banned. But if I want to play casually and I want to play some kitchen table magic, and me and my friend just want to play whatever cards we have, of course we could do that. So that's what I think of when I think of casual racing. If you're racing casually, do whatever you want. But competitive needs to have a rule set that everyone can see. Now, tournaments can do whatever they want. Of course they can do whatever they want. And I've always heard, like, these are the rules, and tournaments can change the rules however they want. Since the council was formed, I can't think of any tournaments that have deviated their rule set from what the racing community and the racing council decided. The first time that it's happened that I can think of, and I might be wrong, is the Cad's Boots tournament this year. And you could say it's within their right. I 100% agree. It's within their right to do that. I think there's a reason why it hasn't happened, though. I think keeping everything simple is so much easier for racers. Can I do Specky Clip? Well, if you're on the ladder, you can. If you're running in the Cross Keys tournament, you can't. If you're running in the 80s Keys tournament, you can't. But if you're running the Casual Boots tournament, you can. It just creates confusion. It's unneeded confusion. So I think part of the TARC admins is getting the ladder back on the side, getting Dunka back into TARC, getting the tournament admins together, and trying to uniform the racing rule set for the betterment of the community. Not because they can't do it, because it makes it easier for the community. And then if you want to do casually, do whatever you want. Like, casual, by definition, is do whatever you want. So there it is. I talked way more about it than I was planning on doing it. Vote for me. Don't vote for me. I want to help. I believe I can help. But if you don't vote for me, it's fine. There's plenty of other qualified people that can help steer this ship. And I think that's what's going to happen. I'm going to be a glass half full person on this one. I'm going to hope that the right people get elected and that TARC is set in motion, going the right direction. Make sure you listen to that episode tomorrow, though. And just give those people that you might not know a shot. Listen to what they have to say. And if they hit a mark that agrees with you, then give, cast a vote for them. If you follow my channel at all, you'll see that I've streamed a couple of times. I did the daily. It was the new All Dungeons mode that the league is running, AAD Keys. I was on the restream for the SG daily. I won that race. That felt pretty good. And then I've been doing some of those Champions Hunt asyncs. And that's been kind of fun. I'm a little mixed on the mode. I don't know how good it's going to be competitively, but I'm down for its inclusion in the league this season. I think it should be fun. We'll see. Like, you got to experiment and try new stuff. And that's what they did. And we'll see if it works out. Fingers crossed that it did. I'm not back racing all the time. I'm not racing ladder. I'm not joining a ton of races. I'll do a couple here and there, but I can't go back full-time competitive. But I have been playing with those league modes for no particular reason. Let's get to the interview. Talked with Chex, awesome dude. Really had a great conversation, enjoyable to talk to. And Chex is just a good guy, and you know, it's easy to be drawn to the good guys. So let's get to it. Here's Chex Human. All right, Chex, thank you so much for doing the show. I know you've been a part of the community for longer than I have, and you know, I've seen you around, and I know you as someone that's, one, really good at the game, and two, willing to play lots of, and maybe willing to play is not the right word, maybe enjoy playing lots of a variety of modes, including glitch modes and stuff. And as someone who's been a part of the community for as long as both of us have, we don't have a lot of crossover. I don't feel like we've had a lot of interaction. So I'm super, super excited to get to know you, really.
Yeah, excited to be here. Thanks for having me.
So, you've been playing Link to the Past Randomizer since when? 2017? Have you been here from the beginning? Yes,
that is correct. 2017. Not really from the beginning. I have been here since spring of 2017. So I watched the spring 2017 tournament.
Mm-hmm. Were you speedrunning before you got into Randomizer?
I was not. I got into speedrunning after I started playing A Link to the Past Randomizer, of course.
Okay.
And
yeah, because you have a pretty good time in NMG. Am I wrong about that? I think you do. I mean, I've seen you run vanilla games.
It's a 125.
Yeah, that's really good. Yeah.
And I got into the speedrun a little while after I started. There was a 2018 NMG tournament coming up, and I had not done many runs. But I was curious how I would stack up. Mm-hmm. And I felt that speedrunning wasn't really for me. I was more into the novelty of randomizer seeds.
Right.
Instead of the repetitiveness of speedrunning. But something about it hooked me. And it hooked me in spite of my thinking that it would be too repetitive, too serious.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah, I feel like if you get a 125, you've definitely spent time learning rooms and practicing rooms and doing the things to get to a 125.
Yes. Some speedrunners really crave that practice and room grind. That's not me. I'm more about doing full runs.
Oh, okay.
And kind of like modifying my movement on each run or on each seed.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of thing.
That makes sense.
I do like practice, though.
Oh, you do?
Yeah, I don't. Yeah. In other words, I don't hate it.
Okay. So, okay. Well, let's go back even further. Were you playing games as a kid? Were you a quote-unquote gamer?
Yeah, that's right. I was basically a Nintendo fanboy and playing Super Mario Brothers from age 5 or so.
Mm-hmm. So you started with an S?
Yeah, I also borrowed an Atari from my cousin.
Oh, yeah.
And I would watch my cousin play Atari and Nintendo games a lot and just enjoyed that a lot. And eventually got my own.
The 2600?
I have to assume so. But I don't know.
Sure. I feel like as a kid, I knew that Atari was a thing, but it wasn't like we were talking about as kids, at least for me. We're talking about which version it was. It was just like, oh, you have an Atari, or even like Nintendo. Oh, you have a Nintendo, right? Like it wasn't later. It wasn't until later when you kind of figured it out. So you're how old are you when you're playing the NES and watching the Atari? It's like six or seven.
So definitely around age 5 and 6, 7, of course.
Sure.
Let's say every number after that.
8 and then 9. Okay. Do you remember the games that you were playing? Is it just sort of like those kind of vague memories of I played video games and Nintendo?
Oh, absolutely. I had probably, let's say, I had exactly Super Mario Brothers Duck Hunt combo. Yeah,
of course.
Super Mario Brothers 3. Mega Man 3 and Mega Man 4. I think those were the four games that I had. Eventually, I got The Legend of Zelda when it was more of a like a $20 promotional level or $40.
Yeah.
This was after I had already played A Link to the Past.
Oh, so you got it way late.
Yeah.
Okay. Mega Man 3 and 4, so you skipped over 1 and 2 then. Because I feel
my cousin had Mega Man 2, and I thought that was great. But I didn't have that in my collection.
Sure. That's crazy that you remember the exact four games that you had. So did you stick with Nintendo as things went on? Did you get a Super Nintendo, or did you kind of move on to other systems?
Definitely. Super Nintendo was what I went with. A friend had Genesis, and playing Sonic the Hedgehog was very fun, but I stuck with Super Nintendo. At some point, I got a Nintendo Power subscription, so the marketing just drove me, of course.
100%. That's so funny. I don't feel like I've really talked with anyone about Nintendo Power, but as kids, Nintendo Power was everything. Like I remember, like at lunchtime, my friend bringing like his Nintendo Power magazine that he got in the mail, and we'd like pour over it and just like it just had its hooks so deep in us.
Yeah, definitely. All the different sections, Counselor's Corner, letters.
Oh, yes, the Counselor's Corner. Yeah. And art. I mean, I was always into art, so I always loved to see like the fan art that would come in that they would post.
Right. I submitted Play-Doh sculptures.
Oh, really?
Out of the Super Mario RPG characters, I believe.
That's awesome.
These were very sketchy characters. I was not going with the right materials here. I was way past the age I should be using Play-Doh.
That's awesome. It never saw print, though, huh?
No. And I'm glad.
Yeah, for sure. So what on the Super Nintendo, what were you playing? Was Link to the Past one of your favorites, or?
Yes. I was stunned by the graphics, first of all.
Oh yeah.
I remember it being an aesthetic experience, like hearing the cymbals clashing in the music. It felt so, orchestral.
Huge. Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
And, so a friend introduced me to that. I think when the Super Nintendo came into my life, I was all about Super Mario World.
Oh, yeah.
And that was the game I wanted. So I remember receiving two games for Christmas, that and Roadrunner's Death Valley Rally.
Okay. And yeah.
For some reason, my copy of SMW was just not working, so it had to be returned. Oh. So my first game I played was Roadrunner, and that is a really challenging game.
Is it?
But
do you play as Roadrunner, or do you play as the coyote? Okay. So you're just trying to dodge the coyote the entire time?
Yeah. Yes, exactly.
Oh,
exactly.
Man. You, that sounds fun.
You find bird seed around the levels and peck at it to get boost power, or I don't know how you get boost power, but
sure.
It's pretty wild, and it's really pretty fast, but it's a little hard to control as well.
Have you played it recently?
Not really recently.
Oh, okay.
But I remember it being pretty hard to avoid damage.
Yeah.
And you just constantly slam into the coyote and all his different costumes. Sure.
I feel like there was a bunch of like Looney Tunes and like cartoon video games on both the NES and the SNES that are actually pretty good. Like decently playable games from what I can remember. The Tasmanian Devil for some reason really sticks out, but I think that might have been Genesis. I can't remember.
Sounds familiar. I didn't play too many different games really. Mostly stuck to the games I had, and I'd also rent games from the video store as well.
Oh yeah, that was definitely a thing that happened when we were younger for sure. So what was your, do you remember, did you have a small library like you did for the NES, or?
This was a large library, about 20 games.
Okay.
So, like, the full Donkey Kong Country series, Mario Paint and Super Mario Kart were games I really wanted at the beginning and had those for a long time.
Gosh, those are so, just so classics, right?
Yeah.
Any Super Metroid?
No Super Metroids for some reason. I don't really know why exactly. I know a friend had it. I just didn't get into it till adulthood.
Oh, okay. Gosh, so many good memories from some of those old SNES games. Do you have any, besides the Roadrunner, do you have any other like secret hints or games that were maybe not the most popular that you really enjoyed playing back then?
Uniracers.
Uniracers.
Do you know what this is?
I've never heard of it, no.
This was a game released after Donkey Kong Country. So it had sort of that same style of advanced computer modeling where
sure.
The sprites were based on 3D rendered graphics and you are a unicycle. The unicycle has sort of like kind of the flexibility to have kind of human like expressions, even though it's just a wheel and a staff and a seat.
Okay. Yeah.
So all you do is you race another unicycle and you do tricks in midair to gain speed.
Okay.
And it's pretty basic, but it has this like rockin' soundtrack of like, it kind of sounds like hair metal songs or something.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
It's pretty fun.
I'm looking at it. So it's like a combination of a side scrolling racing game. With a little bit of platforming, then?
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, man. Wow, I've never heard of this. I'm looking at a video of it right now. The graphics are pretty cool for a SNES game, for sure.
Yeah, it's just repetitive in the simplicity of the graphics and the background. But it's like, you know, the tracks are pretty wild. There's platforming, you have to jump. And they're color-coded. So you know that like if you see yellow and blue alternating, it means maybe jump and you'll take a shortcut.
Okay.
Stuff like that.
It's weird how simple the graphics are.
Additionally, it has a very long instruction booklet.
Really?
That's full of like just tangents and just jokes.
Okay.
It's so bizarre.
It is super bizarre because like the tracks are just like poles, almost like barber poles turned sideways that are stretched out.
Like
you said, with different colors, and then just a weird checkerboard background that's like blurring out of focus. And then it's super weird, but it's interesting. Wow.
Yeah, barber poles is a good way to describe it. What you're racing on looks like long tube.
Yeah, it's super weird. And it literally is just going on. It almost feels like forever. That's cool. Wow, I've never even heard of that. Okay, so did you stick with Nintendo? And were you more of a Mario fanboy or Zelda? Or was it just sort of like, I love Nintendo stuff?
Yeah, I would say both Mario, Zelda. Always looked forward to the next. Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. It's just things like that caught my eye.
Sure.
Earthbound really caught my eye. And back to Nintendo Power, it was, you know, Earthbound was promoted with scratch and sniff cards or something like that.
That's right. Yeah.
So they, you know, it's just peculiar things kind of stood out at me.
It was definitely more marketed towards kids, right? Like this is, especially like as 90s kids, it was like scratching, no pun intended, all of those like itches that we were wanting from our toys, I guess, or our video games were so brand new back then that it just really hit all those endorphins somehow. Yeah.
Yeah, it was. Yeah. And the sense of humor, hooked me as well for Earthbound. And I remember its slogan in the magazine being, "This game stinks."
That's so dumb and simple and great all at the same time.
Yeah.
That's so good.
So I'm like a 10 or 11 year old. So this really, like, I thought that was funny.
Oh, for sure. I mean, it is funny. It's also dumb. As someone that's older, you can recognize that it's silly, but also it just works perfect. It's just perfect. It's great. I love it. So do you stick with like, do you get the 64 or?
Yeah.
Okay.
I remember playing, a demo of Super Mario 64 and just being astounded by the 3D controls.
It's nuts. So
I enjoyed, quite a few games on the N64, Ocarina of Time, Majora's Mask, GoldenEye. You know, it opened up multiplayer games with friends. So all that was really fun.
I just think so much of the things that we were playing, especially with the 64, and how much playing with other people really affected the quality of the game. Like, it's so much more fun to play GoldenEye or Mario Kart with your friends than it is by yourself. Like, those games are still enjoyable, but the deathmatch stuff that you would do with GoldenEye feels like it was imprinted into my brain.
Perfect Dark as well.
Oh yeah, Perfect Dark. Yeah.
So, yeah, that took GoldenEye to the kind of like, I don't know how you would describe it. It just gave it a ton more options.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. So, did you stick with Nintendo as it continued on, or did things kind of evolve? Maybe get a computer or a PlayStation or Xbox.
Yeah, I never really played PC games, and I was a Mac user for basically my whole life.
Oh, okay.
For whatever reason, in our family, we got a Macintosh SE30.
Oh, nice.
Which was a black and white all-in-one computer.
Mm-hmm.
And I would play, you know, pretty like basic computer games on it.
Mm-hmm.
I'd even enjoy the screensavers, just like enjoying the different patterns, and
sure.
There are even little mini games in screensavers that I would play.
Did you in school growing up have Macs? Because in my school, all that we had in like our elementary school were like Apple IIs or something like that.
Yeah, I had Apple IIs. for a bit, and then we had Macintoshes a little later. Mm-hmm. And then IMAX after that.
Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah. I wonder if that played a part in you guys having a Mac at all. Like, it's what kind of, like, what's at school sort of thing.
It's possible. But I think maybe my dad was just into novel and new computing that was coming out.
Not totally sure. Yeah, that makes sense. So did you end up getting like a PlayStation, PlayStation 2 or Xbox or anything like that?
No, no PlayStation, no Xbox. I pretty much stuck with Nintendo. Mm-hmm. And I also kind of skipped GameCube for about a year or two. Since I was going into college age and I wanted to focus more on school.
Mm-hmm.
You
knew it'd be a distraction.
Yeah, exactly. So, at some point I came back, and was playing Melee, which was very fun. And, you know, I realized I really missed video games.
Sure. Yeah. Especially with Melee too. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's such a good game.
So yeah, there were probably two points in my life where I set video games aside to focus on school. So yeah, once at the beginning of undergrad and once during grad school. So,
okay.
Otherwise I've always been playing video games.
That was like the GameCube and then what, like some of the Wii era stuff?
Yeah.
Yeah. So have you picked up every console that Nintendo's come out with? Do you have like, you said you got a GameCube. Did you get a Wii and then a Wii U and then a Switch?
That is exactly correct.
Yeah. That's awesome. A true Nintendo fanboy. I love it. Cause I mean, I'm the same way.
Mm-hmm.
Was there any divergence? Were you playing games with other people though? Like you go to your friend's house and play like some Rock Band or?
A little bit. I took a turn at playing Katamari.
Okay.
Back in the high school days, I'd play Halo with friends.
Oh, sure.
But yeah, other consoles didn't really stick with me. It just wasn't a route that I felt like I wanted to take.
Mm-hmm. So where did you then find like speedrunning or even Twitch? Did you watch Let's Plays on YouTube or anything?
I did watch Let's Plays on YouTube, but it didn't really go anywhere. Mm-hmm. I think I watched Chugga A. Conroy. I watched Sonic and Earthbound. You know, I just wanted to
relive.
Watch people play video games. I always liked watching people play Earthbound or do attempts when I was younger.
Mm.
Stuff like that. But sure. I discovered Twitch in 2014 because of Twitch Plays Pokemon.
Yeah.
So somehow that came into my attention. And I was kind of, you know, obsessed by watching that.
did you play? It was just like chat, right? Like chat could type anything.
I don't know if I typed anything. I knew it was like I was hardly contributing anything and I didn't really understand the strats involved. And it was pretty funny at the time. I also downloaded the mobile app and the chat in mobile was not connected to the PC version.
Yeah.
Or whatever. Uh-huh. So that was pretty strange. But yeah, so I mostly just watched on my Mac.
Okay. So you watch that channel. Do you get then recommendations to start watching other stuff?
No, in fact, that's another dead end.
Oh, really?
Yeah. In fact, I don't know why, but I never continued watching people. I just said I like watching people play video games, but it's not something I pursued so much. Uh-huh. What did come up, however, is there's still two other threads that I would watch Games Done Quick every half a year, basically. Sure. From 2015 or so. So I would just watch it, but I didn't look into watching speedrunners for some reason.
Well, I think it's a lot of it is because it's all done right there for you, right? Like it feels like, oh, you just turn it on and you get to watch a whole bunch of different games and a whole bunch of different streamers.
Exactly.
And
yeah,
you don't have to look into who anyone is. You have interviews on the, I don't know. It's just easy, right?
It was. And perhaps what I was looking for maybe was a finished product, not like a live attempt.
Sure.
But I'm not really sure. But the, you know, what got me into Twitch finally was looking into ALTTPR.
Okay. So what introduced you to ALTTPR then?
There were sort of two things. There was an article in Kotaku online in 2016 that with the headline, like, people are doing amazing things with A Link to the Past. And there was, it was just an introduction to Randomizer with some quotes from Super Scudge and other devs. And yeah, so I knew about that and was curious about that, but I didn't play it until one of my online friends said he was really enjoying it. And that was in spring 2017.
Okay.
So I said, I wanted to play. So he kind of directed me to how I can get started downloading ROM or whatever I did to start. Sure. And
so was racing even on your purview? Like, did you even think of it as racing, or did you just think like, oh, this would be a cool way to play Link to the Past again?
I didn't know about racing. I just, exactly, the latter. I just thought it would be an interesting new way to play. And so I really enjoyed the first experience. The novelty of randomized items really hooked me. And I played for 10 hours. 10 hours, 10 minutes, and wow. 1 second, I believe, is what
that
I
was
just,
your first seed?
Yeah. It was from the, let's see, I just took a note on this history. And so it was from the night of April 8th to April 10th.
Oh, geez.
So that was 10 hours, 10 minutes, 1 second, and 44 frames.
That's so awesome. So did you stream this, or was this just something that you kept offline, kept record
of? Yeah, just offline.
Okay. Wow.
I didn't know about streaming at that point.
Sure. 10 hours though, that's did you think I'm gonna just do this on my own without any sort of like resources or looking up sort of help? Okay.
I don't think I really looked up anything. I remembered I'd played through Link to the Past so many times. I kind of remembered everything except how to get into King's Tomb with a bonk.
Sure. Oh, so, man.
I was able to complete the seed. Boots were at Bombo's tablet. And I enjoyed the whole thing. And basically, the friend who introduced me to it introduced me to the idea of racing it, cutting down times to 2 hours. Mm-hmm. And so I would kind of exchange times with him until I got down to, you know, below 2 hours or so. And, that took about a month.
Okay, that's pretty fast. Were you then looking up like resources to do this, or again, are you just trying to grind it on your own, trying to figure out?
I don't remember how resources got into it. I remember getting into racing, finding people on Twitch. Mm-hmm. I use Cross Products Tracker.
This is also the early days, right? So it's not like the resources are as readily available as they are now, right? People were still figuring out rando.
Yeah, exactly.
At the time.
Exactly.
When do you decide, maybe I'll check out how to race or do a race?
I think it's through watching Jay Cooper.
Oh, okay.
So I think Jay Cooper was the first person I saw streaming because I Googled randomizer and tried to find videos. Mm-hmm. And YouTube wasn't where it was at. It was people streaming on Twitch. So,
right.
So I learned about Speedruns Live and the Discords. I think I may have joined the Speedruns Live Discord first or something like that.
Yeah.
Or Randomania or something. I don't remember what the early Discords were, but I eventually joined the main randomizer Discord, and the rest is history.
The rest is, yeah. And now you're still here all this time later. Kind of tell me about your first experiences racing. Did you enjoy it? Were you putting up decent times? Were you familiar with IRC?
I was not familiar with IRC, but I had heard of it. Uh-huh. And it was, there was obviously some resistance involved, and I had to find the right Mac program
right
to make it work.
And you're playing on Mac emulator as well, right?
Yes.
Okay.
And SNES 9X was developed at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And that worked out. Yeah, racing. I think my first race was just a casual race. And I remember, you know, I think my comment was something about first race, palm sweaty. But it was just really enjoyable. Yeah. And sure. Let's see, what did I get? I took 7th out of 15 with a 136.25.
Nice.
And that was in June. So that was 2 months after I started.
That's impressive. That's really fast.
And Miramong took first with a 117.36.
Oh, I don't even know who that is. Wow.
Yeah, Miramong was one of the early developers.
Oh, okay.
And maybe was responsible for taking out the text boxes.
Oh, okay.
That's what I've heard.
Okay. So I didn't ask you this about growing up, but were you competitive at all growing up? Did you play sports or do any sort of extra activities that were competitive?
I got involved in various sports, but was not really that interested in them. Mm-hmm. I played a little bit of soccer. I played basketball for one day.
One day. Okay.
Which was a pretty lousy experience.
Yeah, I bet.
It just wasn't what I was good at. Mm-hmm. I started with T-ball.
sure. Did you just not have like a competitive itch in you, or was it more just like, I like doing this stuff for fun and I don't necessarily need to do like an organized sport?
No, I was, yeah, I just wasn't that good or interested in sports. Sure. I had a competitive itch more like playing games with friends.
Mm.
I was just,
so you did find normal. You found your competitive itch by beating your friends in Mario Kart 64 and Smash, right? Yeah, for sure. I get that.
So games of pure skill.
I mean, yeah, there is a lot of skill in it. It might not be all 100% skill, but neither are sports, right? It takes a lot of luck there too. So when you found racing and you start doing these like races, are you able to then, is it sort of like, oh, this is what I've been looking for?
I'm not totally sure why it was so addicting, but I would play 1 to 2 seeds per day. Mm-hmm. And the competitive aspect was just part of the secret sauce, you know, combine that with a different experience every time.
Yeah. And it's like, and the puzzle aspect too, because I think as Zelda fans, there has to be, you have to have at least enjoy puzzles if you're a Zelda fan, I would think. And randomizer is a great example of that because it's all new every time. So
yeah,
trying to figure it out.
Yeah. And listening to this podcast, it's really interesting to hear the different things that people enjoy about racing. And some really enjoy focusing on the logic.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm less inclined to follow the logic of a seed. I don't know why, but I don't know how to like define it. It's just that we have different things that really keep us going.
Sure.
For me, it's the novelty. It's doing new things. It's learning about the game.
Mm-hmm.
Stuff like I get that.
I think I'm more along the lines of you than the people that follow are like, they'll pull out the logic and they'll try to solve it in a way that's like most efficient. Like I just can't do that.
Yeah.
I'm not trying to parse like the logs and trying to like figure out like logically this is like the best. And I don't know. I just like to kind of go by my gut. Of course, it costs me a lot of race, but that's kind of my method, I would say.
Me too.
Yeah. I don't know. It's just we're different, right? Like, it feels like that's what makes the game great, is it hits all those different notes for everyone in the way that they need those notes hit.
Yeah, exactly. And the notion that it's randomized gives beginners, a chance. Like, they can win races if they falls want right to place. Race.
And, yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally.
And they want to win, they'll eventually win.
Mm-hmm. So, again, early on, this is 2017. The racing scene is still really new. Are you joining any of those early tournaments, or are you just doing the pickup races? And are you enjoying those pickup races? Because those are like the days of you're not doing a lot of one-on-one. The one-on-one was just mostly tournament stuff.
Right. Not a lot of one-on-ones, but yes, races were big at the beginning. I got into the entrance shuffle tournament in summer 2017. Okay. And then the main tournament, I think, in fall.
Mm-hmm.
And Key Sanity after that in 2018.
And you joined all of those?
Yeah, yeah.
Were you not nervous about doing like entrance stuff? It feels like, again, this is from what I know of you now, is like you enjoy the more difficult or glitchier stuff or things that are going to push you a little bit more. Is that fair to say?
Right. And entrance shuffle, I just found that so cool. Just item randomizer to the next level.
Mm-hmm.
It just seemed like the main game to me. And so sure. It was just a few days after I started racing on SRL that I got into entrance shuffle. I remember thinking about this a couple of years back, and I thought that I had started with entrance as like my intro to SRL, but right. I don't think it was quite that soon. It was like a difference of 5 days or something.
Okay. So it was pretty quickly. Cause cross keys is one of the main modes that people play nowadays, but when cross keys was introduced, and even before that, just entrance shuffle in general, there was a real, I don't know if hesitance, but there was people that were afraid to go that deep into the game, right? Like, how confusing it is. And there was people like you and Act the Boker and other people that were like, no, let's bring it on.
Yeah, exactly. And racing it was my only option, basically, because I didn't really want to go through learning how to install the app on my computer. It was a standalone app at that time.
Oh, it was. It wasn't part of the main build. Okay.
Right.
Oh, wow. That's super interesting. I didn't even know that.
Yeah. I don't remember when it was integrated into the website, but it felt like a while.
Yeah, I understand that. How about tournament performances? Did you enjoy doing the tournaments, and did you perform all right?
Yeah, I did okay. And I think my first tourney race was against Korek.
Oh, okay.
And of course, Korek turned out to be an excellent, champion of entrance.
Uh-huh.
But we were both beginners at the time.
Sure.
So I would win, here and there. I don't remember if I won any in the entrance tournament, but yeah, even in the first glitch tournament, I didn't get past the first round, which was versus Furaime. So there was an Overworld Glitches tournament in 2018, and I was crushed.
Sure. So speaking of glitches, I mean, I feel like your name is very associated with glitched running in Rando. Do you feel like you're associated with glitches?
Yeah, definitely. 100%. And glitched runs of A Link to the Past definitely caught my attention. And I remember there were probably three exhibition races in 2017 that stood out, starting with Christos versus Andy. Mm-hmm. Which was just called, the logic was just glitched. A major glitches logic that expected you to do overworld glitches and use a Haru's bottle adventure to use a fake flute and go without Moon Pearl. And that stuff was really interesting to me.
Mm-hmm. What was it about, again, the fact that the game kept progressing in difficulty, I guess, between like all the items are randomized. Now all the entrances are randomized. Now we can do glitches. What was it about all of that that sort of intrigued you? Because I think you even do like you do door rando too as well now, right?
Yes. I'm not very good at door rando, but okay. I feel like, again, it's the sort of epitome of what randomizer can do.
So you just like pushing it, right? Like you like pushing what you can do or what the game can do and seeing how far it can go.
Yeah. Yeah. And yeah, glitches are, you know, they're interesting because it's breaking the game. It's sequence breaking. It's, you know, weird and unusual tech. But also it can be very accessible since a lot of it is repeating patterns over again. Mm-hmm. A lot of it is just holding B and mashing direction and A
sure.
until you get the lineups. And yeah, it's like an interesting, some of it is like an extension of minor glitches, you know, using spin speed or hook speed to simply get into a state where you can clip. It's yeah. So I found it pretty accessible and just fun.
Have you seen the growth then in the community? Because it feels like, again, with your name being associated with it, people, I would guess, would come to you with...
Oh, and the other thing I was going to say about large races at the beginning, some of my first year races were 1v1s because I would race Overworld glitches with just JC, okay. who would call for races.
Okay.
And basically, I would call for races almost every night for like 5 years or something. So a lot of them were 1v1s.
Because there wasn't a lot of people racing that mode.
Right. But, you know, today, like last night, someone pinged and we got a good race of six people or so.
Yeah.
And we have a glitch tournament with more racers than any other glitched tournament. We have probably 47 or so for the upcoming hybrid major glitches tournament.
So what has caused it to evolve? What has gotten people to get into HMG is what the current tournament is, right?
Yeah, that is. I think first of all, in 2017, the release of Overworld glitches made the glitch modes more accessible. And that's in contrast to the glitch mode before, where Moon Pearl was wild. You needed to use fake flutes, and it expected certain underworld clips that may have made it a little bit less accessible. But yeah, a lot of people start with overworld glitches. And then, you know, learning MG and HMG is sort of a next level, but it's not too much. It's essentially four clips in the underworld.
Okay. Did you find that people were coming to you to get help as far as learning all this stuff? And were you helping them? I feel like you've probably been one of the main people. I think like Malmo is another one of people to go to learn how to do this stuff.
Yeah, she definitely is. And I would say the Glitch Talk channels were just the place to go to. I would ask questions. I would answer questions. I still do. I don't exactly know. I like creating, you know, little clips and tutorials sometimes, but I'm not a great organizer of information.
But you have a lot of it. It feels like you know a lot of it and are able to like communicate it pretty well, right?
Yeah, I really like to do that. Yeah. I've done a tutorial for All Bosses No EG. I remember I had world record at the time, and this is a speed run, by the way.
Oh, sure.
You know, Fox List came along, Doom Tap, they beat the record, and you know, then the route completely changed. But, you know, so I had like a tutorial. The tutorial is kind of out of date, but it still had some, you know, techniques that would help people. So, yeah, stuff like that.
Sure. So where does speedrunning come along while you're doing these pickup races? Is it I should try to get better at the game or?
Yeah, it was a little bit. And it's always kind of funny when I hear that today, like people learning NMG and vanilla preset for the purpose of getting better at rando. sure. It's like it kind of makes me laugh a little bit, but it's totally OK, because I was like that as well. And that just is where people's interest is. Mm-hmm. And people have different interests. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, like I learned NMG strats from Andy's Any Percent. Mm-hmm. No Saving Quit tutorial.
Yeah.
That it's was a pretty like 7 hours.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I learned to really get better at randomizer races. Mm-hmm. So eventually I would get into NMG speedruns and I watched a tutorial by Runner Watcher.
Mm-hmm. God, that's a name I haven't heard in a long time.
Yeah. Oh, and of course, I started with the Fruit Bats tutorial.
Oh, which sure. Is
a fairly concise way of getting into the speedrun from a beginner standpoint.
Sure, for sure.
It's how we introduce the speedrun to a lot of newcomers.
Yeah, that makes sense. Did you find a community of like friends when you joined and started racing, or was that kind of like not even your goal?
I did. It wasn't really a goal, but. You know, I became fast friends with people like iBasley, Ben Teasy, Act the Boker.
And the bad boys of rando.
Oh, yeah.
Sure. Because that's what I think of Chex Human as one of the bad boys of rando. I feel like that's... Mm-hmm.
That sounds like right.
And I say that in jest, but like, you know, Act definitely has some of it, what of a reputation. Ben Teasy hasn't. I know he played a little bit recently, but has kind of been on and off. But a long time Link to the Past runner, really good one as well.
Yeah, and thanks to Ben, I filled in for someone in a recent league season and joined a race. Didn't win, but...
Oh, really? You joined the league?
Yeah, for one race.
Oh, I didn't know that.
And then the team was out.
Okay, that was for But We're Buddies?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay, that's interesting. So,
and I was in a league season prior to that as well.
That was with
Grime and Kyung.
Okay, that was like their last season too, right?
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure because they Komodo Hypers, I believe was the name of the team.
Yeah, that's right. And before that, they were kind of rando retired.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I think you replaced Super Nintaylor maybe?
Is
that?
Yes.
Okay.
And so after that season, we were actually rando retired.
Actually rando retired, yeah, because they haven't played since. You played one game. So you did you have any interest of joining the league when it was started?
Yeah, I definitely was curious about the first season. I don't remember if I seriously thought about it, but I also didn't really want to join up on a team, just in terms of getting people organized or anything like that. Mm-hmm. But being invited to a team later was pretty cool. I don't remember which season it was, but probably was season 3 or 4. So.
Yeah, I think it's season 3 or 4. It was one of those seasons. Mm-hmm. I can't remember. But no desire to seek out a team either in between or since?
Right. And that's nothing against... playing on teams. Playing on teams is really fun. It's just that my interest in no glitches logic waned after, you know, 2019 or so.
Oh, okay.
So I was really more focused in glitched randomizer after probably the 2018 fall tournament.
Why was that? It was just because did you find just open and standard kind of boring compared to what you could do with the glitches stuff?
Yeah, I think so. Just my interest just moved on, basically. Mm-hmm. And I just knew I wasn't as good as the the highest tier of runners. So I could kind of like engage more and be competitive with glitched modes.
I see. And it feels like since maybe 2019 to 2020, the glitch community has been consistently, maybe slowly, but consistently growing. I know there was like a mentor tournament. Right. Did you participate in helping with the mentor tournament at all?
I maybe mentored one race in the beginning, and maybe a handful in the recent mentor tourney. It's not really something I'm very involved with, but I think those mentor tourneys, and shout outs to Malmo, really helped engage people and grow the community.
It's such a good way of bringing people into something that can seem intimidating, because I feel like for me, glitches have always just felt intimidating, and the mentor tournament feels like a way to really sidestep that and get people kind of over the hump.
Yeah, that's right. And it's, you know, glitch modes are just not for everybody. So, you know, it's just going to be a smaller community. Mm-hmm. But when I heard that there were 48 people in HMG, I was shocked that it wasn't, you know, a 10% of the item randomizer tournament. It was actually more of a, you know, a 20 to 30.
Sure. No, I think but that's excellent numbers. That's really cool compared to, like, you know, if you get 300 for the main tournament that come out and you get almost 50 for the HMG, that's pretty good numbers.
Yeah, over 10%.
Yeah.
Is what makes me think it's a big growing community.
I mean, that's good. And the game is a 35-year-old game, right? Like, it's not like we're going to see an influx of new players consistently because the game is what it is. But we are still seeing new people, and more people are getting into it. So it's still pretty cool.
Yeah, it's pretty wild. So it's great to see.
Yeah, for sure. Were you part of the council at all?
Yeah, that's right. I was in for the first two sessions.
Okay, so tell me about your time in the council. Why did you want to join, and what did you think of those wild first two sessions?
Yeah, I was interested in categorizing glitches. And I wasn't going to join the council. I think the announcement was put out. But then I went to SGDQ in 2019 and met Sinak, and he thought it would be a good idea to join. So I put in an application and got in. So I'm pretty grateful for that experience. Of course, it was stressful.
What did you think of it? Like, I mean, that was a lot happened in those first two terms. I think we had to deal with like Mimic Clip. We had to deal with cheaters. We had to deal with just trying to figure out what it is we even were doing at the time. Like, why are we here?
So I was, like I said, very interested in helping with the glitched side of things, providing feedback, you know, just giving info about glitches. I was less interested in investigating cheating. Yeah. But yeah, just listening to the podcast has, you know, helped me understand people get into that for a variety of reasons.
Sure.
Yeah. When Matt said he got into it because he wanted to catch cheaters, I thought that was hilarious.
Yeah.
So that is. That wasn't really me, though. I just felt like I wasn't that good at that part of it. But I did take it really seriously. Because I would get a little emotional when someone would cheat. It just felt like it needed correction, you know?
Sure. I feel like you and I are aligned on a lot of things. The cheating thing, I'm not good at seeing what a cheater is doing or how a cheater thinks. And so I can't kind of get into the mind and like break it down and figure out like, oh, I see that they're cheating here and whatnot. I rely on smarter, better people to do that. But when we find out that they're cheating, it like burns me to my core, because I just hate, you know what I mean? It's all such a, nobody's gaining anything out of cheating. It's so much more to lose. You know what I mean? Like, winning a race doesn't really actually get you anything. It's just, oh, you're just ruining other people's fun.
Yes, exactly.
But categorizing glitches, I think, was kind of what I wanted to do as well. And I think I learned a lot because I'm still fairly new on those first couple of terms. But like you and Taj were really helpful in kind of explaining like what is going on and how we should categorize stuff and all that went into it.
And I feel that I started to take a stance where I really wanted more glitches in competitive racing.
Sure. So
I defended mimic clipping and Heripot and, argued in favor of allowing. Those were, a little stressful to have those discussions, but it was, fairly rewarding to get all my thoughts out in writing and just see if people agreed. That's basically what we had to do at first.
Were you glad to be done?
Kind of.
Yeah.
2020 was really difficult because thanks to Yuzuhara, we had Diver Down and Icebreaker to get into.
Yeah.
Even stair launch or stair extension or Palace of Darkness clip, however you want to put it.
Which one is that? Is that where you lay the Samaria block down and then just immediately walk up the stairs?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
And so I was on board with these things, and it was sort of I had two minds about it because I wasn't really sure about the decisions as they would affect the NMG speedrun. And kind of, I couldn't decide in the end.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
But there were already so many votes that, because that was a big community vote. It was a limited community vote to get the decision made in the speedrun community. But it felt like a lot of people were involved and my vote wasn't really necessary.
Sure. Were you on the council when that was voted on in random?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
Exactly. So who was it? I think it was Gary Olive who talked about this on the podcast, but he was watching the reactions during the election. And I remember Diver Down being behind. So there were like more no votes than yes votes, but there was some sort of like rally for Diver Down at the end, and it eventually got more yes votes.
Wow. That's interesting. That's an interesting way to vote, to where you get to see the votes, and then like if you're unsure, you can kind of react later. It almost feels like that's kind of a backwards way to do it, but
I'm
it doesn't
sure.
matter because the council's dead.
Were
you surprised they didn't allow Specky Clip?
Yes, because of a couple of different reasons. I was both surprised for some reasons and not surprised for other reasons. I was surprised because it was the same tech that was already allowed. And compare that to Icebreaker and Diver Down, which were allowed as new techniques. From the very beginning, I was under the impression that the council was meant to really check new applications and determine whether they would be good for Rando. And, and for the reasons that Boyne posted, it made, his vote made sense to say no to it. From the perspective of certain reasons, like it entirely skips an item, there's no punishment to the glitch attempt. It's, stuff like that. Sure. Are reasons that I understood on that side of things. I would have probably voted to allow it.
Sure. That's not surprising though. Like knowing your position on most stuff, right? Like you're an overworld glitch runner for the most part. You're for glitches. I feel like I kind of am in between. I don't play glitch modes, but it feels like in a line with what everything else has been allowed, right? Like it feels like Pamryump or all the other stuff. So why wouldn't this be allowed? But
yeah,
you don't have to make those decisions.
There's not much of an effect on glitch modes, especially with the HMG tournament. One of the principles of the restricted major glitches rule set is you can clip indoors pretty much however you like, without the use of mis-slotting or door glitches or stuff like that. But just clipping through a rail is fair game. Mm-hmm. And there's also a potential effect on overworld glitches, which is essentially NMG in the underworld. So there would be some sort of following of council rules in the underworld when playing in overworld glitches. Seed.
Where do you think, I mean, speaking of the council, it's dead now. Where, you know, the fog just happened a couple of days ago. Where do you think racing goes from here?
I'm not totally sure. First of all, I have to say the TARC abbreviation is pretty funny for how reduced the abbreviation is, because TARC itself is, it really should be fully expanded to TLOZALTTPRRC.
Yeah. Because we're just, they're just putting Link to the Past Randomizer into one letter.
Yeah, exactly. With the two T's being the.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
So it looks like things won't, well, you know what? I have no idea.
Yeah. That's the thing is, we have no idea what it's going to be. Like, we don't even know. TARC. We don't even know what TARC is. We don't know what TARC is going to be.
Yeah, it's and from what I have heard from council members, some sessions had little activity. So sure. Maybe, you know, maybe there won't be too many glitches to evaluate. Maybe there will be more or less cheating investigations. I think those things were handled by the council, and they will still continue to be handled by a council.
Yeah.
And now it makes sense that if a council can bring on new members, they can also choose to let go of certain members.
Sure.
So that sort of power within itself makes sense to me.
Sure. Yeah, I agree. How do you feel about Rando for you overall? Are you enjoying still playing since, I mean, it's since 2017, gosh, we're 6 years in now. Do you still enjoy playing Rando? Do you still enjoy the racing?
Yes. And I so yeah.
Short answer, yes.
Short answer, yes. And longer answer, I am focusing on speedrunning, as I've been doing for several years. And I still have a lot of goals of a lot of categories I'd like to run. So I try to limit Rando racing, and you know, I really achieved my goal last year. I was able to win the No Logic tournament. So that was, you know, a good feeling.
And yeah, for sure.
From here on, you know, I don't care if I win or lose.
Sure.
So you feel, that way.
You feel like you're doing more speedrunning. What are some of the goals in speedrunning? And what, I guess, I take it you're running more just different categories of Link to the Past?
Yeah. So in 2020, glitch categories were not especially optimized because hook pushing came out in 2019. So I kind of stormed through a lot of categories, swordless, RBO, all bosses, all dungeons, major glitches, and even 100% RMG, and was able to claim those world records.
Wow.
And since then, they've all been claimed by others. Hoda Ruby made a humongous run through all the major glitches categories, except any percent, last year, I believe. Maybe 2021. The categories are constantly changing with lots of optimizations.
Is there new tech also being discovered, like, consistently?
It hasn't been consistent recently. Okay. Since misslotting was really the biggest thing in 2019. And it's
what
just,
is misslotting? I'm not sure.
Misslotting is where you use Ancilla glitches to put, and Ancilla are the things that Link makes from boomerang to dust. Mm-hmm. From dashing.
Okay.
And it's where you put those in the back slots where they don't normally belong.
Okay. Like,
these are the slots where sparkles go.
Okay.
And even further beyond that, the game does strange things when Ancilla are in these slots. Okay. In other words, that they are normally in slots 0 through 4.
Okay.
And mislotting that is allowed allows them to go into slots 5 through 9.
Okay.
So when that happens, like, for example, if there is a Samaria block in slot 9, you can manipulate the duration and direction of the hook shot. And so the hook shot.
That's pushing?
Exactly.
Okay.
So it's essentially you use a hook shot on a hookable object and it pushes Link in a direction that you define.
Okay. Gosh, it's crazy how many things that can be done with this 35-year-old game.
Yeah.
Okay, because I don't ever get technical. I don't know the technical stuff. I just know, like, you can shoot 3 arrows and put 2 bombs down and somehow fake flipper into the water. Does that have something to do with Ancilla then?
Yeah, that's right. It's not mis-slotting, but it is using the front slots to fill those slots up and prevent a splash from going into them.
Okay.
And the splash is what tells the game, oh, maybe we should check for flippers.
Okay.
And so if there's no splash, then it allows Link to swim.
You're just tricking it. I see.
Yes.
Are you part of the people that look for glitches?
I'm less of a glitch hunter. I look for applications here and there.
Okay.
But some people are very good at this, and it's pretty amazing when it happens. It's all community effort, you know. Sure. little change here, little change there, and little discoveries are made.
Mm-hmm.
Like mis-slotting, for example, was developed by Yuzuhara and Pincus. Tarsho really developed door glitches, indoor YBAs, along with Glan and Samurai Prawn. And back in those days, that's when Major Glitch's randomizer was really interesting and sort of no logic really put use of these door glitches.
Wow. Okay.
That was kind of the beginning for me.
Yeah. So it feels like even within the last few years, things have just changed pretty consistently. It felt like the mis-slotting feels like it was such a huge moment then for the glitch community.
Yeah, exactly. But it was a kind of a slow moment in a way.
Sure.
In other words, we didn't integrate a lot of applications in racing until 2021, 2022, especially with the Glitch League that came out. I was still kind of new to using a stuck hook push or a stuck push.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember Foxless kind of helping me understand how to use it. And a lot of people found that stuck pushing was really the way to go. No need for a Samaria block.
So that's the thing, right? So someone finds a glitch or a way to glitch stuff, then you have to figure out, how do I apply this, right?
Yes,
like it's not just like, oh, here's a glitch and whatever. It's like, oh, how now, where does this go? How do we break the game even further with this?
Yeah. So it's really fun to follow along with these things and just apply it in racing. And so that kind of keeps me coming back to racing.
Okay. Are you doing any other speedruns outside of Link to the Past?
Not really. I did a little bit of Super Metroid, and that is about it. I did a little bit of Zelda 1.
Mm.
I joined a multi-category Zelda 1 tournament in,
okay,
I don't know, 2020 or so, and lost. In fact, couldn't really complete runs at that point. I still need to complete a swordless Z1 run.
It's hard. That game is hard.
It is hard, yeah. The combat is so difficult.
It is so difficult because the way, you know, the sword only goes one direction, whereas in Link to the Past, it swipes. So it just makes combat so hard. And so much of that game is combat. So it's pretty tough. The movement's really tough as well, with like some lining a lot of the pixels, and it's just a whole area of one color, so how do you determine where the pixels start and end? Oh, that's I tried to play it and it was fun, but it was hard.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was a little bit more resistant to trying out the randomizer because it was tricky for me to learn all the locations.
Mm.
And I never really did.
Sure.
But yeah, the rando is fun as well.
Have you submitted any runs to GDQ at all? Like any glitch runs or anything?
Okay. I might like to, but I have not yet. And occasionally I do online marathon runs, and those are a bunch of fun. It's always a lot of pressure, but I do enjoy it.
Sure. I know that you've been playing Tears of the Kingdom as well. I've seen that on your stream quite a bit lately. How are you enjoying Tears of the Kingdom? And did you play Breath of the Wild as well?
I'm enjoying it so much. I have to play it every day, basically.
Sure.
Especially at the rate that I play it, which is I am very slow and like to explore.
Sure.
And I did play Breath of the Wild and did most of that in 2018 or so.
How would you compare the two?
Well, there's just so much to do. And all the stuff that there is to do is very enjoyable. And I was a little surprised by the Altar Hand concept. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's not for everybody. And I remember hearing in your last interview, was it Ninjembro who said it just wasn't for him?
Yeah.
That aspect.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I can totally understand that because you have to, know how things will move in three directions. And, you know, it's tough. It involves a different kind of visualization and, a lot of button pushing.
Yeah.
But it's so cool.
It's how very cool.
You just manipulate things and find your own solutions.
Sure. I spent so much time watching memes and YouTube videos and Instagram clips of just the craziest stuff that people can make with Ultra Hand and the way that they're breaking the game, because it's bananas and fun at the same time.
Definitely.
All right. We're going to get to the tilt question, which is I'm very curious, because the one thing I've observed from you over the years, Chex, is how you're just a very even keel. It doesn't feel like there's a lot that weighs on you, at least publicly. So I'm really curious to know how you handle tilt, whether it's in the middle of a seat or after a race.
Yeah. And, you know, it takes some effort to remain calm. But I do my best. I can't say too much more than anyone else has said. And when I heard things from others like Andy on your show, I believe made an analogy to basketball, where if you make a mistake, you just have to focus on the next play.
Yeah.
And I found that fairly helpful recently. Just focus on what you're doing next.
Do you get tilted while you're racing or doing runs?
Yeah, sure. And it leads to mistakes.
Mm.
If my opponent finishes first and I don't want to finish, then I'll quit, you know?
Sure.
Usually I like to finish races. And, you know, I regret somewhat quitting one race recently where I was in Ganon's Tower. I should have just finished and see how things went in the end. But, you know, there's no reason to continue if you're not having fun.
Yeah.
But other things that have helped me, like after the race, I really appreciate what others have said about just being happy for your opponent. If you can just think about their perspective, maybe it's a big win for them.
Mm-hmm.
It's the other thing to keep in mind is it's just a game.
Yeah.
And one thing that I try to do is I try to focus on that novel experience I had from first playing Randomizer. Like, it's very interesting to find something in a place that it's not supposed to be in.
Totally.
And why not just see if I can recall that joy from the beginning?
Mm-hmm.
Because the game that hooked me is one that was just for fun.
Sure. Man, I love it. I love your perspective, and I love hearing your story as well. I was super excited to talk to you because, again, I feel like we haven't had a lot of interactions. You know, I feel like we've passed by and we've been in some of the same circles, but we haven't had a ton of interaction. But there's one thing that I know, and that's no one has a bad thing to say about checks. You are one of the good people in the community that just, I feel like, breathe positivity. And I, especially in times like we are in right now, we need people like you. And super glad that, one, we got to hear your story and I got to know you a little bit better, and that you're still around and bringing that positivity to us all, man. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, I really appreciate the kind words, and yeah, a lot of fun to do the podcast.
Big shout out to Chex for coming on the show. Really appreciate just him coming on and sharing his story and giving me an opportunity to get to know him. That's really one of my favorite things about the show, is getting to know the people that I haven't had a lot of interactions with. And I've been having a blast. Like, the show's been coming out a lot, and we've been doing a lot of bonus stuff. Speaking of, there's still time to vote on the draft episode. You have until this Sunday. Last I checked, it was tied. So make sure you're voting. If you haven't listened to the draft episode, it was a lot of fun. I think we're going to do something like that again. The response has been pretty good. So make sure you check that out. Tomorrow, again, if you're listening to this on Monday, tomorrow I'm going to have the admin application episode. So I got as many as I could from those admin application forms to come on the show and talk for just a couple of minutes. And it's not even me interviewing them. It's just giving them a platform to share their views, their take, and what they think TARC should be and how they'd do as an admin. So give that a listen. And then I think voting is going to start Tuesday or Wednesday. Again, vote for me. Don't vote for me. I'm cool either way. Next week on the show, going to have someone that I talked about a lot, and that's Telethar. Telethar is one of those people that have risen quickly due to his race results. You know, won the league last year. And, you know, I've mentioned him a lot on the show, so I had to get him on, and we had a really fun conversation. So come back next week for that. Talk a lot of, like, theory crafting and stuff. It's really good. Subscribe to the show wherever you get your podcasts. We're pretty much everywhere. If you could leave a review for us on Apple Podcasts or Stitcher, it really helps us out. Just helps us spread the word. Show's growing. I'm having a blast doing it. Next week was going to be the last episode of season 4, and then we're going to just jump right into season 5. I scrapped those ideas. We're just going to keep season 4 going. I've got 9 more people to talk to close out season 4. Then there'll be a little bit of a break. So come October, I think there'll be a little bit of a break between season 4 and season 5. I'm just having too much fun. I'm really enjoying where I'm at in the community. The fact that I can play the game a little bit, the fact that I'm getting to talk to everyone has been really cool. And I'm excited for this TARC stuff. I think it's really interesting. And again, last half full. We're going positivity. All right, that's going to do it for this episode. Again, tomorrow, admin episode. Next Monday, Telethar. Really appreciate you listening. See you then.